The International Criminal Court issues arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and others for crimes against humanity.
We believe that it is a proof that justice and the long arm of justice will reach anyone who violates the norms that humanity decided that cannot be violated.
So what does it all mean in terms of actual prosecution?
I think these have practical implications. They don't happen immediately. And that's always the challenge with international justice.
Today is Thursday, November 21st, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant bear criminal responsibility for the following international crimes committed on the territory of the State of Palestine.
That's the International Criminal Court lead prosecutor back in May requesting the arrest warrants that were issued Thursday. The warrant said there was reason to believe the Israeli leaders used starvation as a method of warfare by restricting humanitarian aid and intentionally targeting civilians in Israel's campaign against Hamas in Gaza. Charges Israeli officials deny. Here is Netanyahu, also from May.
The outrageous decision by the ICC prosecutor, Karim Khan, to seek arrest warrants against the democratically elected leaders of Israel is a moral outrage of historic proportions. It will cast an everlasting mark of shame on the international court.
The Palestinian ambassador to the Netherlands said the International Criminal Court's issuing of arrest warrants for the Israeli prime minister and his former defense chief showed, quote, the course of justice is being rectified.
We believe that it is a proof that justice and the long arm of justice will reach anyone who violates the norms that humanity decided that cannot be violated, especially the most egregious atrocities like war crimes and crimes against humanity.
The judges also issued a warrant for Hamas commander Ibrahim al-Masri, also for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity related to the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel that started the current conflict.
For the victims, I'm already receiving their inputs. Of course, we communicated directly with the victims. We're representing over 300 victims for 14 different crime bases. This decision means that victims from five different crime bases of Hamas on the 7th of October, including hostages in Gaza, still, they can be represented there and we'll represent them. We'll bring their voice in the case of Mohammed Deif.
Tel Aviv-based lawyer Yael Vias-Gerzman, who represents a number of victims of the October 7th Hamas massacre on Israel.
Quite an interesting development, Scott, to see a leader of, basically a so-called Western democracy being charged with crimes against humanity. It's a little jarring.
Well, it is jarring. I mean, we consider Israel to be a full-fledged Western democracy, and yet Netanyahu and the defense minister have been charged with essentially the same crimes that Vladimir Putin has been charged with for his execution of the invasion of Ukraine. So what does it really all mean? Let's talk to an expert. Joining us now for some understanding is Leila Sadat, Washington University professor of international criminal law and special advisor on crimes against humanity to the ICC prosecutor.
Is this a groundbreaking decision?
Well, I think it's groundbreaking and it's not groundbreaking. I think right now the expectation of the international community when you see a conflict that appears to be raging out of control is that the ICC may be investigating. And in this particular situation, since the state of Palestine had accepted the jurisdiction of the court, it's particularly obvious that the ICC's jurisdiction would be engaged. I think what's upsetting in the United States, where I live, obviously, is that Israel is a close ally to the United States of America, and Israel has allege that it's not committing the crimes that the prosecutor alleges are being committed. I would note that three Hamas leaders were also indicted by the prosecutor at the behest of Israeli nationals who actually flew to the court to ask the ICC to intervene in the situation. And the only way the ICC has jurisdiction over Hamas leaders is because Palestine had actually ratified the Rome Statute. So I think that it's unfortunate that two of the Hamas officials were executed. There is one remaining individual whose whereabouts and viability are unknown. And so the court also issued the arrest warrants against Daif.
How unusual is it that a Western nation's leader has been indicted by the court?
Well, Slobodan Milosevic was probably one of the first Western leaders to be indicted by an international criminal tribunal. It was the Yugoslavia tribunal, not the ICC, but he obviously was the president of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. And the Nuremberg trials, which are the genesis of the entire international criminal justice project over the last 75 years, are clearly the genesis that, you know, and it was Germans who were indicted. So no one is above the law. And it's just as simple as that.
The judges said there are reasonable grounds to believe that the blockade on Gaza, the lack of food, water, electricity, et cetera, created conditions of life calculated to bring about the destruction of part of the civilian population in Gaza. Would this be a classic case of crimes against humanity? And how is that different from genocide?
Oh, that's a great question. So genocide is, in a way, the most challenging of the three core ICC crimes to charge, because you have to show that the accused intended to destroy in whole or in part a racial, religious, national, or ethnic group. And that specific intent requirement, as well as the group intent requirement, is very challenging. What you need to prove for a crime against humanity, whether it be murder or extermination or sexual violence, which is also alleged against Hamas, for example, is you have to show an attack that is widespread or systematic against a civilian population. But you don't have to show the discriminatory intent of the accused to do it in order to execute or to exterminate the group. So crimes against humanity are hard to prove, but genocide is probably the most challenging to prove.
The court really has no teeth, right? I mean, if your country is a member of the court, you're supposed to detain a suspect facing a warrant if they set foot on your soil, but the court has no way to enforce that.
Well, I really don't know what you mean by enforcement, right? So a lot of people think that enforcement is about having police, right, who run around and arrest people. States are required to cooperate with ICC arrest warrants. And so Omar al-Bashir, for example, the former president of Sudan, who's now in jail, jailed by his own people. But when Bashir was under an ICC arrest warrant, he did flaunt the warrant by traveling widely, and there were states, even ICC states, that refused to arrest him. That said, he then traveled to South Africa, which has a very vibrant legal system. And even though the South African government had allowed him to participate in the meetings he was there for, the courts actually ordered his arrest, and he had to leave extremely suddenly in order to avoid arrest in South Africa. So the European states, you know, we have arrest warrants out for Vladimir Putin, for Maria Lvova-Belova, for four top generals in the Russian military. And I'm sure there are arrest warrants that we don't know about because they're under seal. The Europeans are going to implement those warrants if those individuals are on their soil. They have a robust ability to do so. So would somebody from an ally state be able to exert enough political influence to get the courts and the police to back down? Possibly, for sure. But that's not really the way interstate arrest warrants work now, is they do get implemented even against very high-ranking officials.
Do you think that the decision, particularly when it comes to Netanyahu and Gallant in particular, will complicate things for further isolate them, or will it have any practical implications?
I think these have practical implications. They don't happen immediately. And that's always the challenge with international justice. It took a very, very long time to apprehend Mladic, Karadzic. It took a very, very long time to apprehend many of the most significant indictees of the Yugoslavia Tribunal. It took a long time to get Charles Taylor in the dock for the Special Court of Sierra Leone. In national systems, think of Israel trying Adolf Eichmann. That happened in the 1960s. Israelis had to wait a long time in order to get the individual accused, right, and then convicted of being the author of the final solution in the dock. So international criminal justice, because the cases are complicated, because the accused have high rank, I think they, in a way, appropriately take a long time. You wouldn't want this to be a hasty process because it has to be measured. It has to be judicious. The evidence really has to be overwhelming beyond a reasonable doubt in order for somebody of this high position to be appropriately indicted and convicted by an international court. So in a way, the system is maybe frustratingly, but it's frustratingly slow by design. It's not meant to be on a fast track.
So would it also be pretty serious evidence to get to the point where they've even gone where they have?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. No ICC prosecutor wants to have egg on their face and have an acquittal after having taken the political courage. And it did take political courage because we saw what happened in the Afghanistan situation when the Trump administration actually sanctioned the ICC prosecutor under the IEEPA. So it took a certain degree of political courage in order for Karim Khan to do this and for the judges to issue the warrants, knowing that there's sanctions bills right now threatening in the U.S. Congress. And nobody takes that kind of decision lightly. So I think the one thing you can say about this is the evidence was carefully parsed, carefully measured, carefully looked at, and it was not something that was done lightly at all.
Let's say that they actually do get Netanyahu in court. What happens then?
Well, the first thing that would happen isn't actually a court trial. The first thing that would happen is under the ICC's procedure, the pretrial chamber would have to confirm the charges against the accused. That's a new step in ICC procedure that doesn't exist in any of the other courts, and it doesn't really exist in national courts either. So the individual is brought before the pretrial chamber. Their counsel, of course, will contest jurisdiction, will contest the appropriateness of the case, and will contest the charges. And the judges will then, another three-judge panel, will have to rule on whether the case can, quote, be confirmed. And if it is confirmed, then there's going to be a document confirming the charges that will then be the basis of a trial. And the trial happens in a way just like in the United States. The prosecutor presents their evidence. The defense presents their evidence. But at the ICC, the victims also get to present evidence, which is different. And that's why it's such a shame that we don't have the Hamas accused, I think, who are realistically going to be, at least not these accused in this case, because the victims obviously want their day in court as well.
Well, we appreciate your taking the time to speak with us. Thank you so much. I know you have a lot going on today, so thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, and I hope that was helpful. It was great to be with you.
Leila Sadat, Washington University Professor of International Criminal Law and Special Advisor on Crimes Against Humanity to the ICC Prosecutor.
Fascinating stuff here, and also the fact that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is being charged on the same day with some of the same crimes against humanity, as a leader of Hamas. And it's just interesting to see how that plays out and how this will impact him going forward. Recently, this week, I believe, the death toll for Palestinians in Gaza from this war, 44,000 human beings, mostly women and children.
I think the thing that's most surprising, Lori, is that this isn't surprising, and it's part of what we have seen as world opinion starts to turn against Israel, because of their prosecution of the war.
And the question now is, when is enough enough?
This has been The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X and on Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, whenever you want it, just go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.